Now, on the line, I have Bishop Dennis Nulty, who is, of course, our Bishop of Kildare and Loughlin. Good morning, Bishop Dennis. How are you?
Good morning, John, and good morning to all in KCLR. Lovely to join with you this morning.
We're delighted to talk to you. Now, I was reading a letter that you've sent out this week. It's coming up to that time of the year where you're very anxious to encourage vocations.
Absolutely.
And to say the least of it, you're concerned, you're worried. There are not as many vocations as you would like.
Absolutely, absolutely. And while in Kildare and Loughlin, through our vocations director, Father Rory O'Donnell, we have been doing reasonably well with number of seminarians going into Maynooth and Rome. The numbers obviously going in will not replace the men who will obviously retire, the attrition rate that is going to be there at one end and those coming in at the other. So obviously the two just won't meet, but we must keep encouraging vocations, and my letter was, I suppose, was written in that context.
I read a similar letter that you wrote in 2013, just you had been appointed the previous August, and at that stage, again, you were talking about the disturbingly large portion of priests who are elderly, who are over 75.
That's right. That's right.
And I think at that stage you had three vocations, three people at various stages of training. Have things changed since then?
Yes, indeed. At the moment, we have six seminarians, and that is very, very good. And it's not all about numbers, but it certainly is a great improvement. And since then, I also appointed Father Rory O'Donnell as our vocations man, a full-time priest in that role for 2 years now. He's back in a parish while still holding the vocations brief. But like he has done, and a team of lay people around him have done great work promoting vocations in all the parishes. 56 parishes, John, is a huge diocese.
It is a huge diocese, and lots and lots of people who attend Mass regularly. But one of the things you're saying is that because of this change, there are going to be less priests available, that you have to find new ways of providing the service you provide.
Absolutely, and I talk about lay leadership in parishes after, you know, helping to form and train lay leaders to lead our parishes, and equally priests working very closely with them and missioning at times maybe to that parish. We have a huge, I suppose, tradition in Kildare and Loughlin of lay involvement, and it's about just making sure there are things like parish pastoral councils in every parish, parish baptism teams. A new thing, John, we started training recently for our funeral ministry teams, and that we trained seven parishes, many of them in the southern end of the diocese, in the catchment of KCLR, trained recently new lay leaders to lead funeral prayers, for instance, in a funeral home, at a removal, or at a burial in a cemetery. Obviously, they won't be celebrating Mass, but all this supports the priest, works alongside. I suppose it's co-responsibility might be the jargon of the term for it, John.
But will some people be concerned that basically they want a priest and they're not getting a priest? They're getting a secularized church almost.
I think not, in the sense of the parishes. There are 11 parishes out of 56 already have funeral ministry teams in place. Four of them have them a number of years, and the four that have them a number of years will tell me, and there are big parishes like places like Naas and Newbridge and Portlaoise, that the response is very positive to lay people. The important thing is consistency. That you know, lay people just don't do some of the things, that they're involved as a very clear representative of the local parish community.
Now, I can hear from just loads and loads of people I talk to, who some of whom would be churchgoers and some who would have been and some who would be struggling with it, and the two things come up time and time again. The first is, what would there be wrong with priests getting married, and that would that make it... Would there be more people who would be attracted to the life were that the case?
I'm not sure, in the sense that Church of Ireland, who had married priests and women priests, also struggle with getting people to come forward for ministry. It doesn't necessarily answer all the questions. I think what we've got to do is see a larger role, and my letter is written in that sense, for lay people, a voice in all their parishes. And last Sunday's Gospel is very much about hearing the shepherd's voice, to hear the voice of lay people.
Now, the other question, you know, the obvious one that I'm going to ask you, and women will say, what is wrong with a woman priest? We can have women doctors, we can have women judges, we can have women everything, and many will say, there's no prohibition in the Bible. Why is the Church, and I noticed Pope Francis recently turned his face very, very firmly against women being ordained.
That's right, and Pope Francis is in all our places a wonderful vicar of Christ and a great leader of compassion and tenderness for us all. I think it's unfortunate sometimes, maybe, John, that we go back to the same lines. In a sense, it's unfortunate that the image often portrayed of our church is overwhelmingly male and predominantly clerical, And obviously we need as church to explore more roles for women in leadership and decision making. But I'm not saying that ordination needs to be there. I think what we need to do is see lay leaders, men and women, lay men and women in all our parishes, helping, working side by side with the priest who they love. They keep, as I go around every parish, John, they tell me we love our priest. And, you know, even priests, quite a number of them, over 75 and still in huge ministry in our diocese. The support they get from the local parish is tremendous. So I'm trying to encourage that.
And the workload some of those men are carrying at that stage in life is remarkable.
It's remarkable. And I appreciate it deeply. And I do my best in a diocese this size that goes maybe from Kilcock to Greignamana and from Abbey Leaks to Baltinglass, of trying to get around every parish and support priests and parish councils and liturgy teams and lay groups, enabling them, empowering them. And maybe my letter is an encouragement towards meetings and which will happen in May, June and into the autumn.
I'll come down and I'll mention those later because I'll give out the, tell people where they are.
Wonderful.
And so on. And the other thing I will mention, of course, is that you have a Mass in St Mullins.
I have indeed, after next Sunday, looking forward to it.
That's
St Mullins is a joy to visit and I look forward very much to being there for the school celebrating the anniversary of the school. It's going to be a wonderful celebration.
That is 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Glynchurch this coming Sunday. Like every bishop, you have prepared a report in your diocese and you've been to Rome to, did you meet the Pope to present that report?
I did indeed. It was the Ad Limina Apostolorum visit, and it happens every, supposed to happen every 5 or 6 years, but apparently, John, I'm only Bishop 3.5, 4 years here, not just 4 yet. It hadn't happened for maybe a number of years, so it was great, an opportunity to meet Pope Francis, and he's such easy company, but he's also challenging. We hear messages on him, but he gives a very challenging message. He's no soft touch like in a footballer in a soccer parliament, you know.
One of the things that observers would see is that the church on the ground and priests and maybe bishops locally and so on, and perhaps Pope Francis, are far ahead of where the eternal curia are trying to keep the church on many, many issues. Things like sexuality, where, you know, Irish people have just completely moved on and realised sexuality is a very complex and mixed thing and we welcome people of all sexualities. It's as if the people in the church who want to become more modern are being held back.
Yeah, I think that's always, I suppose, the chasm that you have. I think the church will always remain an object of fascination to many, maybe bewilderment or curiosity to others, hostility to some. That not everyone is going to be happy or contented, but people will be on that journey. And I think we as church on the ground need to walk with people in all their brokenness, in all their pain, in all their tenderness.
I was surprised and delighted to see the Pope move substantially the other day in talking about science and saying, listen, forget all this, talking about this. The Big Bang Theory is not a theory, it's real. That is the way the world started. He's moving into an era of perhaps common sense.
He's wonderful. I think every day something new comes up and some development. But of course, I always say to people who just look at and they will compare Pope Francis to Pope Emeritus Benedict or Pope John Paul II or the First. I always say, look at, we get the Pope we need for our time. And I think I said that to you on your show when I was with you before. And Pope Francis is wonderful, but remember, it's Christ we all are following. And the Easter message yesterday reminded us in Antioch, the followers of Christ were first called Christians. So it's Christ and it's his message. And we hear that message developed by people like Pope Francis and other leaders the whole time. And that's development and that's to be encouraged.
So you were talking about the way things are changing, and I was Mark Hederman, who you would know, the abbot of
Benstall
Abbey.
I know Mark Benstall, yes.
Yeah, a very thoughtful man, a man I've met many times, a man probably in his 70s and a lifelong priest, but I think he actually got ordained late in life.
He was appointed abbot and he wasn't a priest. He had to be ordained to be an abbot, apparently, and that all happened in whatever time frame, yeah.
He brings up two points in his new book, The Opal and the Pearl. One relates to women, which you might come back to, but the second he's saying, the church is relying on a set of principles which are not relevant anymore.
I don't know that I go along with that. I think that the church has relevance the whole time, and I think we come back to the most fundamental relevance of all are the Ten Commandments and how we try our best to love God and to love neighbour. And last year was a year of mercy in the church, and the biggest question we all have done, how can we be more merciful to those who are broken, to those who are in pain all around us? That message doesn't change, John.
He's saying, the headline in the paper is just probably sensationalising it a little bit. He says, the church will die without evolution, talking about a new set of ethics that are relevant to today's world. And again, he particularly mentions women and the ethics of sexual behaviour.
It's interesting. My experience going around the diocese, and I'm out and about, yes, for confirmation, you know, each day there's different events on, and I find that, you know, on the ground, the church is certainly not dying. The church is very much alive through the work of the priest, through the work of the lay people who love their parish and love their church. And I try simply as a bishop to maybe lead that a little bit more, and that's what this letter is about, and obviously not everyone is going to tick every box and not everyone's going to be happy with every aspect, but we still have to give leadership and give witness along that road.
Texter here, and I'll just read it out exactly as it said, maybe the church treat women as second class people. How would you respond to that?
I wouldn't agree, because I think in our diocese we have many, many women involved in different aspects of church, and they certainly are not involved in second class citizens. I think that also Rome and the Curia you mentioned earlier, they're probably a more women involved in different aspects of the Curia than ever have been. But obviously, look, it's 2,000 years of history, and we've got to make that move as well, you know.
There's been an enormous change in the last, I suppose, 25 years of history in Ireland. I was fascinated by the National Maternity Hospital row last week. There seemed to be a deep suspicion of the Sisters of Charity or a religious organisation having anything to do where they could influence a hospital in any way. How did you feel about that?
Well, I suppose I was frightened myself, because I think what I suppose we're looking very clearly is that this seems to be the time when religious congregations, committed people of faith, see their deeply held beliefs under attack. And the Religious Sisters of Charity have done tremendous work and continue to do so. And, you know, they're talking about issues around ownership, issues around... Look, I heard someone talking about the maternity hospital, that the new one that will be built, and talked about all the things that can be available there. And it sounded more like, in some respects, a mortuary machine that we're going to build rather than a maternity, bringing life into the world. And I think the sisters have given super examples of that. And I think the minister called for a sense of a sus and a calmness for about a month to see could some agreement be made on the ground. I think that has to be respected as well. But I would have great respect for the sisters, what they've done, alongside many lay people working with them. That's important as well.
But there is a sense that the people of Ireland have moved beyond the values that their parents and grandparents grew up with, and that they were very uneasy about.
That's interesting, John. I'm not sure. Sometimes we wonder like this, like, yeah, the census, and you read that as well, the Irish census report said that 78%, you know, tick the box that they were Roman Catholic. April of last year, just over a year ago. And that was in the dark of a Sunday night with no one around them, no kind of campaign around.
Mind you, it used to be 98.
That's fine, but 70, if any parliamentary party got 78%, they'd be quite delighted. If any radio station, any opinion, you know, look, it's a very good figure. And I think that's the challenge we have, to reach out to the 78% and to reach beyond that percentage. Because we also must go to those who maybe haven't understood the Christian message and need to hear it anew, and that's what I'm about.
Here's some good news for you. Bishop Nulty Martina says, if there was a Bishop Nulty in every parish, people would go to Mass every Sunday. She says he is absolutely fantastic. So
that's very nice.
So take that nice compliment.
Thanks, Tom.
Another texter, Elizabeth, asks why a lot of married Roman Catholic married couples can be ministers in the Church of Ireland but not in the Catholic Church. She says priests were allowed to marry years ago.
I think that, again, these are traditions, and there's obviously some teaching there, and you know, I think that, I suppose my line and my encouragement is trying my best to encourage vocations, and equally to encourage the vocation of every lay person to rise to the challenge of leadership and co-responsibility, collaboration in their parish.
Another area of life where there's been great change has been education. Does it bother you the level of, and I think it could only be viewed as cynical, because the churches still have control over so many schools, that there are people who aren't part of that 78% who are getting their children baptised quite cynically and using the church purely so they can get a school place? Should that problem be addressed?
Well, I always have a difficulty that people feel they have to baptize their child to get their child to school. That doesn't make sense. For me, baptism is a calling for a life following of Christ, at least to do our best for that life following. Something may happen along the way, but not to get your child into school. That wouldn't sit well with me at all. I have a lot of schools under patronage in Kildare and Loughlin, and again, For me, it's not about control. It is about empowerment. It's empowering those schools, the Catholic schools, to be most inclusive, to welcome children of all faiths and none. So, look, we welcome the consultation that Minister Richard Bruton is engaging in at the moment on the ground. And as a diocese, we have engaged with him on that, as we've done so, and I have done so in the past.
It is painfully slow, though.
It is slow. I suppose all process is slow. The wheels of church and maybe society move a lot slower than some people might like. But there are many, many people who are happy with the system of education. I'm going to add State Mulls, you mentioned that next Sunday. They are absolutely delighted with the school system and what has been handed down from one generation to another. And it's a celebration. So I think we've got to respect there are many voices on the ground. Sometimes the ones most unhappy are the ones that may be loudest at times as well.
Another texter says, why not change the priesthood training back to 3 years? I didn't know it ever was 3 years. And this person says, guys get bored very easily.
Well, I don't. Thank you to that texter. But I think, personally, 7 years, and we also are looking at introducing a propedeutic year, which would be a year of reflection before someone goes into seminaries, to make sure that this calling is exactly what they want in life.
Now, another texter, speaking as a male, in my parish, most of the altar servers are girls. Nearly all the Eucharistic ministers, readers and parish priest members are ladies. And this person says, and I'm quoting directly, time for the Catholic Church to move on, exclamation mark.
That's right. And I would also say, was that a male texter? Is that what you said, John?
That was a male texter.
Okay. I think a big challenge, and I've preached about this myself at different times, for the church in Ireland is to look after, in some ways, the young male who does not want to go into your seminary, who wants to marry or settle down in life, rear a family, he needs to be cultivated as well. Because so often, maybe the dialogue is around the women in the church and inclusivity and all of that, that in some ways we see it as women, priests, but the men are kind of forgotten somewhere there. So it's about co-responsibility of all lay people.
Does it bother you that you just the old chestnuts are brought up to you time and time again, celibacy and women, celibacy and women, celibacy and women, that they are hijacked, they've so much hijacked the debate for a generation?
It doesn't bother me. I suppose, John, I'm well used to going around secondary schools and indeed at times visiting as a two-third level colleges in the diocese, the IT in Carlow and Carlow College, that they're going to hear these things all the time. And look at, I would have asked the questions myself as a young man at school. So, look, it's good those questions. It shows people have a love for their faith and a curiosity. Maybe are intentional disciples. I don't know, you know.
Another encouraging text for you. Looking forward to our daughter making her communion in the cathedral on Sunday, and we've enjoyed the journey to it with Sister Dolores, Dr. Rory and Deacon Dave. Now, you have a number of meetings. They're taking place in deaneries, and there's a list of things you want people to think about. You want them to think about the appointment of priests.
The appointment of priests, what maybe people want from their church, their parish, their diocese in 2017. How can we outreach to families better? The World Meeting of Families is in Dublin next August, and hopefully Pope Francis may be part of that wonderful gathering in Dublin. And how can we reach out to families in all our parishes? We ourselves will be planning, hopefully, a parish picnic day towards the end of August, where all parishes will be invited to come together on a massive picnic, again to support family life, and not do it in an over churchy context, but do it in that social context. I also hope they will reflect on chaplaincies in schools, hospitals, nursing homes, outreach to minorities, those on the margins, the whole permanent diaconate, and parish and diocesan resources. We have 8 permanent deacons, John, in our diocese, and we have 4 more just starting formation now. So, again, all that, I think, are green shoots, maybe of recovery in some way as well. At least I'm very happy where I am and I'm trying to encourage people on that road.
And people will hear about those meetings leading up to that meeting in Mount St. Anne's on June 20th when you will talk about it. And just a reminder, this Sunday there's that Mass that you're saying at 2 o'clock in Glynn Church.
That's right.
You're celebrating.
Looking forward immensely to that and meeting all my friends in St. Mullins and that wider area.
Thank you very much, Bishop Dennis Nolte, for talking to us. It is always a pleasure to have a conversation with you, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this
morning. John, thank you very much, and thanks to all in KCLR. God bless.
Thank you, Bishop Dennis Nolte.